Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, and welcome to episode 17. I am thrilled to share with you today's conversation. I had the opportunity to talk with Katie Bowman of Nutritious Movement. If you haven't heard of her, you're in for a treat. I originally found Katie's work about 7, 8, 9 years ago. I found her through one of her blog posts about squatting. The way she approached movement in a very big picture way resonated with me deeply. I didn't think a lot of it. It was back, I'm going to date myself here, to all the you youngins. It was back in the day when blogging was really in and everyone was blogging. And so that's how you consumed a lot of your content. So you spent a lot of times on a lot of different blogs. So I came back to her work a couple years later when I was feeling really stuck on my own healing journey with diastasis recti and pelvic organ prolapse, and I couldn't find any answers that made sense to me and what was happening in my body. As I dug into her work, everything clicked. It all started to make sense. All these different pieces that I didn't even know were connected and I hadn't even thought of started coming together. I started on my own healing journey, and her work was really central to my entire process. If you want to hear that story in detail, you can jump over to the Diastasis Recti episode 7 of the Thriving Birth Worker podcast, where I share about all the entire process. After almost 2 years into this healing journey, I was asymptomatic and feeling better and stronger than I had 10 years earlier. I knew that this was the work I wanted to do with my life. I felt like I finally figured out what I wanted to be when I grew up. I went through Katie's restorative exercise specialist certification and training, which was a 2-year process with a very specific and holistic approach to movement and strength. This work is still, years later, very central to what and how I teach. I am honored that Katie came onto the podcast. I don't think I gushed or fangirled too much, but I was a little nervous to talk to her because she's so smart. But she's so very approachable and kind and genuine in her questions and her approach, and I know you'll love this conversation as much as I did. And so here is my conversation with Katie Bowman of Nutritious Movement. Katie, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Erin. I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, so you are a teacher of mine, and initially I found you through my own healing journey, which I've talked about on the podcast before, but I found you through a blog, and it was the one titled You Don't Know Squat, and it just made me laugh because I was like, this girl has some sassy humor in her. And it caught my attention because, you know, a lot of blogs are very like, you're amazing. And you're like, you don't know squat. I was like, who is this lady?
You're like, she sounds like a jerk. I should listen to what she...
Well, it caught my attention. And so then I read your article and your blogs, and I just dove into the rabbit hole. It was so... I loved your approach to taking a question and then zooming out and almost coming back in and landing really in a close place, but it was really getting to the root of it, which I think is one of your superpowers. So I'm really excited to process some of these questions today and have you work your magic.
All right. I can do that. I can try. I can try.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, no big deal. So if we could talk a little bit about, you talk about this concept called pregnancy and movement, ecology, as far as it's connected to movement and pregnancy. And if someone hasn't heard of this idea of like movement ecology, could you start by, you know, this is our zooming out. Can you kind of talk about what you're referring to when you use that phrase?
Well, I guess in the most general sense, it's, we tend to do exercises on the personal level, you know, because someone told us that we should. And then if you're a professional of the human body, there's usually some sort of information you're giving. People need to exercise. And so the ecological perspective is, I would say, the bigger picture, which is there's how movement works in your body, but then there's how movement works in a family and how movement works in a community, and then how movement works in a species, and then interspecies movement. So like movement ecology is just that, that there's a bigger perspective to consider what's going on when we move or when we don't move. And most people aren't dealing with that when they're trying to help someone else move a little bit more. So they'll be like, maybe do these six exercises or maybe do these three stretches. But as you said, when you pan out a little bit to consider those exercises on a bigger scale, it changes which exercises you give, because we all don't exercise for the same reasons. We're not all trying to we come with different bodies. And so the broader perspective of ecology, which is in general, it's the same perspective of any sort of ecology. It's that things work together. Trees work with other trees and non-tree plants, and then also different wildlife and microbiome. The fact that all of these are going on, you know, if you're trying to decide which trees to plant, it's like, well, what's your end goal here? And what else does the ecosystem that you live in have or not have? And so it's just that. It's thinking a little bit bigger when we talk about exercise. And I think that the movement ecology examples as we talk today will, I can give more concrete examples, but that's really all that movement ecology is the fact that the way things move together is different than how they move by themselves. And we're trying to all move together. And so exercise is like a lot of sciences, it's been reduced down to, you know, an element or two. And so a little bit different than movement ecology, but more what comes from, you know, Move Your DNA, which is a book I wrote about this phenomenon, which is movement. That movement is kind of like a diet, you know, so to speak, that different moves are like different nutrients, and you have to kind of understand what a person's movement diet is a little bit to know if you're doing too much or too little of something, that there's a source to the exercises that we give, and that source is more natural movements, and that the way we're really giving exercises is much more like someone would give vitamins and minerals and less like someone who would teach about whole foods or how to cook and shop for yourself or how to grow food, or that sourcing your food matters in terms of the quality. So it's to bring in, again, that broader perspective. So hopefully we can flesh more out as we talk. I assume we're going to, that's not the only question, right?
No, okay. That's it. We're done.
Okay, good. That was perfect. Perfect.
Awesome. No, it's so cool to slow down and think about relationships, mm-hmm. and relationships between us and our own body. Because I know, you know, you're really good at that as far as like the pelvis to the rib cage, but then also that zooming out of between us and our family unit, and then keep zooming out and realizing that it is about relationships a lot more than it is about like what we like to do sometimes with science is like, let's just talk about one muscle and that one muscle's function, and being able to be like, well, it's all about the relationships. That's good.
Right. Well, I mean, the reduction part of it is part of how you figure out a lot of pieces. So I certainly adore that process as well. It's just that when you reduce it to what this muscle does, for example, like if you say, oh, the pelvic floor does this, it's like, well, what does a pelvic floor do when you're walking? What does it do when you're sitting? What does it do when you're going from sitting to standing? And then you'll find out that what it does in the very narrow situation that was created to figure out, you know, what it does changes. And so it's the reintegration of the parts back into relationship, as you said, back more into a considering that a person is more than a minute or a blip or even an hour or even a day. You know, we're quite dynamic, and so it's just to expand that. But yeah, it's all going to be about relationships, I think, in the end.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when we're talking about the pregnant body, there is a relationship between the pregnant person and their fetus and the shifting parts also in their own body, because the body isn't stagnant. It's accommodating for all the space. When you're thinking about exercise and movement, and you're thinking about this shifting body and its needs, and you're thinking about more an ecological approach, what are a few thoughts that go through your head when you're thinking about exercise and that type of thing? Because I know traditionally the approach is women or pregnant people, they need to exercise because it's good for heart health and you want to kind of maintain a healthy weight and you want to, you know, get your heart rate up. And if we were to zoom out and think about movement in a little bigger way, what are some considerations that you kind of think about when you're thinking about that situation?
Right. Well, like you said, the conventional, I don't know if I'd call it traditional, but I definitely call it conventional. The conventional idea of exercise is that it's to improve your physiology or to, you know, to improve your health, to create a vessel that has more or less risk, you know, of different outlying issues. So you're trying to be, you know, as healthy as possible. And I do think that we think about exercise during pregnancy more than only about the body doing it, because I think that there is research and discussion around you are creating a healthier, it's usually, I think, around metabolic issues, you know, for the fetus themselves, as well as the person with the exercising body. For me, I would go out a little bit farther to say that movement is not only about maintaining your health. It's part of the system. It's part of a working system. So again, I move your DNA. I use the example of a whale. So there's a whale, when they swim in captivity, they're swimming in a circle over and over again. That's pretty much the full shape of their swimming. And so their structure through that type of swimming, especially the males that have a long fin, you get this kind of folded over dorsal fin. And I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because you can read about it if you'd like, but it's the idea that that folded fin comes about because the whale is not swimming as it should, as it's not swimming in a way that works for its physiology really well. The fact that it's the way that it moves through its natural environment, the natural amounts that it moves in the natural direction, which is not a circle, you know, with jumps and a bunch of other different movements, that's part of the whale's anatomy, because the physiology of that whale evolved in an environment that was that. And so the fin doesn't have any other structure to hold it up. The structure to hold it up are the forces that are created by the way that it swims, which is the same way that I view pregnancy. So pregnancy, I think of it as this beautiful period. It's like anyone who's gone from that non-pregnant through pregnancy, through delivery, through family tending, there's a long continuum of movements in your life that change, right? I think that we've kind of reduced pregnancy into mass accumulation. You're going to get heavier now. Oh, look, now you're lighter now. And it's not showing to me the beauty of the role that movement plays during pregnancy. So as you're getting pregnant, pregnant's a binary state. So once you're pregnant, as you're becoming, as your fetus is getting bigger, you're acquiring mass. And it's not only that mass, it's all the other masses that are going to go to serve that offspring. So you're accumulating mass in a small amount, and then you're moving around with it, just like that whale would be in the ocean. And what you're doing is you're getting stronger, right? So if you were not pregnant, but you were just slowly adding, let's say you walked 10 miles a day, and you slowly added mass to your body in a way that didn't really stress you out. If you had to walk 10 miles and you added, you know, a half a pound to your pocket, no big deal. if someone threw 8 pounds on your back, you would feel it if it came on all at once. But you've got this slow accumulation process. So kind of lockstep as you're moving with this mass accumulation, you're getting stronger. And you're getting stronger in a way because you think of walking as one of the kind of fundamental natural human movements, meaning throughout history, humans have walked throughout their pregnancy from, you know, often great distances every day. And there's a real specific mechanical thing where as you're propelling that weight forward, you're kind of balancing more mass muscular wise on the back. And so you're making your structure balanced. So you're not just like a person who had a certain amount of strength and then are tacking on 20 extra pounds to your midsection. You're a person who's adding weight and then diversifying, spreading out weight and muscle all throughout your body to deal with this feat that you're going to have of not only carrying more mass towards the later stages of pregnancy, but also bearing your skeletal structure as you do the work to deliver it. And then the more challenging part is now someone is actually going to put, you know, 7 to 10 pounds in your arms, and then you're going to have to move that around for the next couple of years. And so it's this beautiful training program that you have spread out over a period of time. And so like, that's how I think about the role of movement. And yes, it does all of the other things, which is, you know, optimize your metabolic panels and other things that everyone in this scenario, you and the fetus, are dependent upon. But it also does, like the whale, it's this, the way that you move during pregnancy, this natural way of moving, is part of your anatomy. It's part of the, it's part of what the process of delivery has always hinged upon, you know, and also not just the delivery, like the whole thing, carrying, delivering, and then literally carrying afterwards, that is, you get a nice slow on-ramp, I guess, through 40 weeks, if you will, if you're moving during that time. Like now the next thing to talk about is we're not moving, but that is, when I talk about humans having a natural amount of movement, that argument of there actually being a volume and a diversity of movement that the human structure depends on, pregnancy is part of that, right? It's a specific type of movement. You know, you couldn't necessarily sit on a recumbent bicycle and pedal for 3 hours a day and get the benefits that I'm talking about, right? Because you're not actually carrying your body weight in that scenario. You can still meet the guidelines of so much cardio exercise or, you know, keep your weight down. You can do that in lots of different ways, but you can't necessarily optimize the mechanical, It's like the mechanical elements to your physiology without also looking at, am I swimming in a circle in a tank here, or am I mimicking more the way a whale would swim if it wasn't in a tank?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, that delineation, I think, if we can dive into that maybe for a second too, on, you know, exercise versus movement, and how do you determine, you know, because when all you've done is swim in a tank your whole life, it's very hard to identify when you're swimming in the tank.
Sure.
And to be able to identify like, oh, these are movements that whales would do in the wild if your parents were in the tank and their parents were in the tank and you grow up in the tank and everyone you know is in tanks, then it's sometimes very hard to think outside of that and be like, wow, what would it look like? Because a lot of us can't get out of our tanks in some ways. Like, we have to kind of bring extra things into it with us as far as our culture and our life. And we're not going to necessarily like move out into the woods and be hunter gatherers. So practicing that, because I think a lot of us are, our clients or ourselves are really motivated, especially during pregnancy, because there's that outside force that we know, like, I want to do what's best for my child. Like, I really do. And I think that's when a lot of women kind of or pregnant people really kind of identify, I'm willing to make these changes. But then the question is, what does that look like? So when you're talking with people and you're processing this yourself, like, how do you start shifting this, you know, shifting from just assuming I'm in a tank, this is what I'm doing, to like, okay, I want to start adding extra things?
Well, I always try to start with what are the most available of the natural movements, and also the ones that the volume of them has gone remarkably down. So walking, again, walking is one of those movements for me, and everyone can be like, yeah, sure. I, for those that can walk, but like, I'm talking about a larger volume of walking than probably everyone thinks about. So if you just started with adding more walking, that would be a fairly simple way of getting more of the movement that I'm talking about. And then also breaking up large bouts of sedentary time with more walking. So for those who do walk, we're usually doing it all at once. Like, I'm going to go take my walk now. And maybe you'll walk 2 to 3 miles a day, which is amazing. And you want to keep doing that. But if it's the only movement you're doing, then, you know, it's like, okay, that's like a 2% of the day or 2% of a week. If you do it every single day, movement, it's pretty low percentage wise. So can you add, you know, 2 15-minute walks someplace else that's not at your walking time? And it's like the old fitness recommendations of, you know, park farther away when you're going, or can you walk somewhere instead of drive somewhere? And it's just getting into that habit. We're much more in the habit of reaching for the car keys, because it's probably more to do with time, which is why I focus on the ecological perspective, which we can talk about later, how that relates to when you don't have time to move. And then also, it's a lot of the natural movement recommendations, and especially the ones around pregnancy, which I think is how you even came into the work that I do, was this idea of how you take rest, the shapes that you take rest in. I mean, everyone's taking rest. So do you drop into the same chair all the time? Or can you squat to rest? Or can you sit on the floor in a bunch of different positions that move your spine and your hips and the muscles in your legs a different way? Because we're in that exercise-centric model, oftentimes our recommendations are like, you're going to have to go do a video, you're going to have to go do a class to help you figure out all the ways that your hips can stretch. It's like, yeah, that's great, because it's good to learn in those concentrated places, but you can also just take rest in a different shape in your own home. It doesn't take any more money or more time. You just go all the way down to the floor instead of stopping 2.5 feet above the ground and hitting the chair. You know, throw a couple pillows down if you want to be more comfortable. But you can put these movements back into our lives because they've always been there until recently. It's very recently, biologically speaking, that everyone started to sit, you know, 2.5 feet above the ground almost all the time. You know, like the fact that we don't explore our knees and our hips and our pelvis beyond the height of a chair, like that's an abnormal, relatively speaking, throughout populations and throughout time. We're kind of outliers in the fact that our hips and knees and ankles and all the other parts, that they never really move outside of the distance to get us from standing to a chair. That's the bulk of the experience. So those are two really simple ways of exploring natural movement. Other way, I mean, and none of them are in a cave. Like, none of them require mm-hmm. that you move to the jungle. Like, what do you put on your feet? What do you put on your feet every day? Do you put something on your feet which requires that your lower body, and really from your spine all the way down to your feet, require that you adjust the tension and the lengths of your parts to deal with, maybe if you have a heel on, or what we call a positive heel, which is when the back of the foot is raised above the toes? Like, that's another shoe convention. It's an outline convention. It's as outlying as never using your feet and knees, you know, to go beyond a chair height, the fact that we've put on a heeled shoe almost every day of our life, starting as children, that affects the structure and it affects the muscles that you use when you do go move. And so swapping footwear for something that moves you almost passively when you make that switch, something that changes the muscles that you use when you're walking and change, you know, your alignment and where the loads are placed, as far as on your pelvis or on your linea alba, which is the tissue running down the front of the abdomen. It affects the pressure on the pubic symphysis and the lower back. And so you can move more naturally, so to speak, by getting rid of the unnatural condition of your heel being elevated. Like that would be another, just a simple way that it fits into your life without having to change cultures.
Yes. And I think there's so much beauty in celebrating the small things. Our culture is so about big shifts. It's like, I'm either going to move out into the woods and be a hunter-gatherer, or why bother? And to celebrate these shifts of like, what if I got rid of my chair, which is a huge shift if you think about it on one perspective. And then from another perspective, it might not seem that big, but I'm sitting here doing a recording with you and been working on my computer today and I'm on the floor. I've got my little floor desk and I'm shifting and I'm moving and I'm looking outside my window and I'm able to let my body have all these little micro movements that wouldn't be available if I was sitting in a chair, but I'm still getting my work done. I'm still on a computer. Like I'm not out in the middle of the woods completely changing my life, but I have felt a huge difference in my body just adding these small shifts.
And I think the large, small thing is really just, as you alluded to, like how you think about it. So I think for humans, we tend to really assign big or little based on the things that we see, right? So if I move to a cave, the difference between the structure of my house and a cave is like totally different. It's a huge shift. Whereas if I go from a 1-inch heel to a zero drop heel or zero rise heel, that's only like an inch. That's small, but it's like, but how many steps, how many minutes are you in your shoes? Like you're in your shoes a very large percentage of the day. You know, you could be in your shoes for 70, 75% of a day. So when you change your angles of your body parts all the time, that's much more of a large shift than something else, right? Just because we tend to focus like I always say minimalism is much more maximalism. Like a big shift would be like, I got rid of all my furniture. And then like I don't think that many people feel comfortable getting rid of all their furniture. So it's like, well, you can just sit on the floor. That's pretty minimal if maximal means, you know, getting rid of your furniture. But at the same time, you choosing to sit on the floor for the same amount of hours that you normally sit in a chair, but you changing how you sit, even if you sit differently, even if you sit maybe not on the floor, but somewhere in between your chair and the floor, all of those minutes and all those new joint angles that you experience throughout your body, like that's a maximal shift. It's just, it doesn't have a big, you're not required to change places. You're not required to hire a mover. You know, you don't have to buy a bunch of new gear. It's just like these small decisions that you make on a regular basis can have a very large impact.
Absolutely. And also realizing how interconnected the body is too, because then instead of, I'm just thinking for like the pregnant body, a lot of times the thought is like, I need to strengthen my pelvic floor, or I want my pelvic floor to be able to yield during birth. And so then we think Kegels a lot of the times is what is prescribed. And yet if we add a lot of these little subtle movements and then the walking, which I know is really powerful for the pelvic floor, we realize, okay, like I can actually incorporate this movement into my everyday life. Now, I'm not saying all Kegels are all bad, but there's more than just, I'm going to sit here and squeeze this isolated muscle and hope to train it so that I can give birth.
Right. And I don't think Kegels are bad either. I don't think any vitamin supplement is bad. Like I'm thankful for the vitamin supplement. The nutritional need has been reduced down to a compound. Okay, we need the pelvic floor to be able to generate a certain amount of tension under a certain load, and we need to be able, it needs to be able to relax in a certain situation. Like, so we know what the need is. The ecological idea is, how are you supposed to get there in a way that gives you the volume that you need, right? So for me, that's where I switched to, well, what is a Kegel doing? A Kegel is this, you know, pubococcygeal contraction, right? It's like you have a load placed on your pelvic floor all the time when you're standing or even when you're sitting, right? It's the weight of your organs. So the way, I guess, nature balances that a little bit more is when you're moving around, what you're doing is you're accelerating the weight of your organs onto your pelvic floor. But the fact that you're also using your leg muscles as you're moving around, the way you use your leg muscles starts adding to the supportive structure of the pelvic floor. Those leg muscles, as you're moving and getting your stuff done from point A to point B throughout the day, you know, coming down and up from the floor, carrying things, picking up other kids, carrying wood, carrying water. Just imagine if you've ever gone camping, all the movements that go into setting up a tent and hauling loads from your car. Now that's your life, right? If you live in that way, that amount of gathering things and setting them up and breaking that down, that would happen throughout all day long, bending over, cooking things, you know, trying to figure out where your other kids are and, you know, finding other friends that are across the lake, right? Like, so if you just imagine that, like, and to give you a little insight into the abundant movement, and you're like, okay, well, all of this is part of what goes into the fact that I also have weight on my pelvic floor all the time. So weight on your pelvic floor is not an unnatural condition. It's a totally natural condition. Accelerating weight, which means every time you change position, your organs get heavier relative, I guess lighter sometimes too. But the fact is that the weight of your organs on your pelvic floor, it's not a static weight. It's not like 30 pounds pressing down. You get heavier or lighter depending as you move. You know, you bend over, things get lighter, you stand back up, they get heavier. If you jump, they get heavier. You know, so there's all these varying weight. And so your pelvic floor is getting all this training, but the other parts of the pelvic floor that we don't include in the pelvic floor. So I'm a big proponent of a gluteus strength as part of a complete pelvic floor model, because the gluteus maximus is what stabilizes the sacrum, which is a big attachment point for the pelvic floor. So you don't, when you're talking like musculoskeletal system, you want to understand which muscles move which bones in which ways. So the pelvic floor can pull on the sacrum, but the glutes can also pull on the sacrum, which means the glutes kind of pull on the pelvic floor in this reciprocity relationship. So when you're a culture that hardly moves at all, and when you're a culture that sits the bulk of your life, then part of the in the tank thinking is to be like, well, I need this. We figured out that this muscle needs to strengthen. So we continue to move very little and sit all day. And then we've come up with like, well, then just clench and relax your pelvic floor, because that's kind of stimulating what you would get if you were moving around a bunch. So that's why I talk about minerals, like vitamins and minerals, this idea, like, don't change what you eat, just start adding things in. So if you look at a folded fin of an orca that's at SeaWorld, someplace similar, how we would probably approach, if anyone has ever worked in exercise therapy or movement, is like, when we see that folded fin, it's like, well, that person needs to do some corrective exercise. Like, we need to balance, we need to crunch the fin 30 reps in the other direction, get some foam rolling on the tight side. Like, we see the structural thing, and then we have this idea of applying the exercises to it. But no one's really talking about, hey, that guy's swimming in a circle all the time, you know? So you can do those other things, but maybe stop swimming in a circle, because the force that pushes it over, that undoes the therapy, is the swimming in a circle. So to do all of these corrective movements without changing the fact that you're sitting all the time, mostly in a chair, is to not really see that much benefit from the move, from the exercises or the exercise supplements you're taking. And it's to miss the opportunity for someone, especially who's super keen right now. It's like pregnancy is such a time where you kind of, you overhaul so much of your habits. It's like this time when you consider changing what you eat and how you move and your, how much you drink. And, you know, it's like all the, like all these things are at this beautiful period of time where so many people are like, I've always wanted to do better, but maybe intrinsically it's challenging for me, but extrinsically I can be motivated for this other person who ironically is actually inside of me. So it's like the weirdest sort of extrinsic, intrinsic motivator. So it's a good time, I think, to start talking about the ecology of movement and natural movement, because people are never more keen to start changing the way that they live right when they're in this natural kind of milestone for an adult of becoming a parent, right? Like, and if things can last through pregnancy, as I'm interested in how does a sedentary culture deal with this unprecedented sedentarism that's increasing? So for me, I've chosen pregnancy and children as a place, not only because it gets the next generation moving, but because you can actually influence the culture of the next group by those people having the children, creating a new environment that allows movement to flourish, starting with the first movement, which is being born.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important what you were just saying. That is such a time, pregnancy and being pregnant is such a time where we are willing to, most of us, like overhaul and relook and ask those questions and have that internal, external feedback. So as we're wrapping this conversation up, we are talking to birth care providers who let's say we see it, we get it, we have this ecological perspective. How do you have any tips on, I know you were saying like starting with things that you do already and not doing anything that's, completely overwhelming, throwing your house out or things like along those lines. But do you have any tips of how to present this in a way that doesn't seem overwhelming, but isn't coddling? Because a lot of people are willing to think and to make these decisions for themselves. And so I don't want to, like, we shouldn't withhold information, but how do you present it where it's not like, it doesn't sound like you're saying, go move out in the woods?
Well, I'm just laughing because the way you started the interview, when like the idea that everyone else's writing is more coddling than mine, like I'm not that big of a coddler. Like,
no,
everyone else is nice. And then you're like, you don't know squat. So I guess to me, it's not nice or not nice. I like all the information. And so I do think that we are in a time, we're in a time where being sensitive is we're in a time where being sensitive has become a priority because of great insensitivities for a long period of time. So like that's a thing. And that's a thing that needs to be paid attention to. There is also the idea that we change information we have because people getting all the information might feel bad if they get it. And I think that those are two separate things. So I talk a lot about walking and walking on textures and walking in different environments. And I would all get, you know, some feedback, which is like, I felt really upset at your recommendation because I live in Phoenix and it's a billion degrees in the summer and we only have sidewalks. So when you say what the recommendations are, it's not really fair because I can't do those. And my point of view is more, and my response to this too, is like, I understand that that is not a good feeling to know that there's something that you might need that is not, like, the environment is not providing for it for you in this moment. But it's like, if I was writing a book on nutrients, I wouldn't want to edit out nutrients. I wouldn't want to write a book that was only including the nutrients, which would mean essential dietary compounds, I wouldn't want to edit that if someone couldn't get them. I would want them to know that one of the reasons that they're experiencing, you know, a predictable outcome would be because of this compound, because then they can make a choice. They have information about, and maybe we all can't make all the choices all the time, but at least it's not like this magical thing happening to you. You have a broader sense of it. So I always feel like I'm trying to position my information more that way. It's like, I don't expect everyone to be able to get everything in the same way that I can't figure out how to get all of my essentials. And there's certainly a hunk of essentials that I could get, like it's possible for me to get, but I still don't seem to figure out how to get them. So when we're right, when we're talking about movement, I've never told anyone to become a hunter-gatherer or run away. Like, again, like I try to really stick with the simple pieces. And I also don't feel that providers have to figure out everyone else's life for them. So I think it's more like, I would like you to track how much you are or are not moving, right? That empowers someone else to start thinking about, I didn't really think about how much I'm moving. I exercise every day. Because that's usually the question. Are you exercising? Do you exercise every day? Great. But rather than focus on an exercise perspective, I am really interested in people tuning into how little they move. Because moving an hour a day is a huge accomplishment when everyone else is swimming around in the tank with you. But it's not the kind of movement that we're talking about right now. We're talking about something more abundant, more diverse, more distributed throughout the day. So even before you leave the comfort of your home, or your workplace and all the spaces in between, it's to look at how much you are or are not moving in those spaces. How much do you move per day? How many steps do you think? I mean, there's all these tools that exercise professionals use, pedometers, fitness trackers. It could be good old, you know, piece of paper and a pencil and just going like, where did you walk to today? I have a chair to butt ratio, like how many seats in your house and how many minutes do you sit per day? And then it's like, can we reduce this somehow by 10%? And so here's some ideas. Some ideas are, I want you just to sit less. I want you to, is there anything that you're currently doing sitting down that you could do on foot? You know, like, and just, that's the way I work. If you look at my body of work, it's mostly those types of things. It's not, how do we get more exercises? It's getting people to pay attention to their movement habits, getting people to pay attention to their sedentary habits, which is different than how much you move. And then start with going, okay, I'd like you to start, you know, like how comfortable are you in, what are the positions that you recommend people use in birth or train for to prepare for birth? Is there a way to take those movements or body shapes that you've deemed valuable and help someone figure out which body part is interfering with them accessing those postures? And then how do you, you know, create a program for them out of that? A program that's, yes, an exercise one, but also a beyond exercise one.
Yes, that's so good. So thank you. That was such an awesome zoom out, zoom back in example of how you think and how you teach. And I just so appreciate you and your time and your expertise. And I will include a list of all your wonderful books. But if people are wanting to learn more from you, where can they find you?
Walking, usually. If you want to ask me in person, just look around. I could be walking through your town. You never know. But in general, you're going to have to find me online. So Nutritious Movement is the main website that houses, it houses 12 years worth of stuff to start looking at. So that can get you to books, that can get you to online resources, articles, and get you to podcast episodes. You can look on social media and see daily application of these ideas, like what it actually looks like in people's lives. You can read through a page on a day in the life so that you can see multiple lives and how they've put more movement into the day. It's a good resource because I think modeling is what's missing. I think that there's enough information. There's handouts and books. What we don't have are models. We don't have models for people who move well throughout the day. And so I try to create resources that allow people to see movement and action because that's the biggest barrier of all is you can't imagine yourself doing it. And so when you see the strategies that people use, it's like, oh, I could do that. Or I could do a slightly different version that would suit my lifestyle a little bit more. So all that through nutritiousmovement.com.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you. I appreciate being on your show.
I've always loved how talking to and listening to Katie pushes me to think deeper and more fully about concepts. I know we just touched the tip of the iceberg in this conversation. So if you're wanting to dig a little deeper into movement and how it connects to pregnancy, birth, and beyond, I have several resources for you. So first, Katie has created a whole page on her site dedicated to this topic of moving well during pregnancy and has compiled a lot of resources all in one spot. So I have a link in the show notes that will take you directly to that if you're interested. And also, I highly recommend her Diastasis Recti book for anyone who is connected with birth work. It's smart, accessible, and answers many of the questions and gets really practical in its application. And it is also, without even being in the title, a really good resource for anyone connected to and wanting to learn more about pelvic organ prolapse and the pelvic floor function and strength, as well as the core. So both of those topics are covered in that book very, very well. If you're wanting to integrate more functional movement into your own life, I've created two 10-minute exercise classes with the birth worker's needs in mind. They're quick, accessible, without any fancy props or equipment, and they're created to specifically help you find your own movement patterns so that you can take this strength into your work and support your body as you support your clients. You can find these classes on my main webpage, erinunderwoodmovement.com, or under the show notes from today's episode. I've gotten some great feedback on these classes, and I'm thrilled to share them with my community. If you've enjoyed this episode, if you would be sure to like, share, and subscribe, and I love chatting on social media, so go ahead and share a screenshot of this episode, tag me, and let me know your thoughts. Creating dialogue is powerful and really connecting. I'm so grateful for you, your willingness to learn and to grow, and how you support this community. I hope you have a wonderful week. I am over here cheering you on as you pursue living your one life beautifully and to the fullest. Bye for now. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.